I'm Marty Moscoen. Welcome back to Radio Time. So does this sound like you? No matter how early you set your alarm, it's always a mad scramble to get out the door. You're easily distracted and lose track of time and end up being late for most activities, even the ones you want to do. You delay and delay and delay until the anxiety sets in, and then you are in a frenzy to get a project or a task completed. You are known among your family and friends as the late one, the one who is never on time. Well, help is on the way. We have two guests who have joined us in this hour of Radio Times. Pauline Wallen is a clinical psychologist in the Harrisburg area, a blogger for the American Psychological Association, and wrote a book called Taming Your Inner Brat, a guide for transforming self-defeating behavior. Pauline Wallen, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Also with us is Diana DeLonzer, and she's a management consultant, author of a book called Never Be Late Again, Seven Cures for the Punctually Challenged. And Diana, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thank you very much.
And Diana, I was reading that you were pretty much a well-established late person. Why was that? And sounds like you aren't now, but what kind of a late person were you?
Well, that's funny. I was a late person. I've been late all my life since I was a very young child. I was suspended 3 times in junior high school for tardiness.
Wow.
And lateness caused so much havoc in my life, being disciplined at work, losing friendships, having my husband be upset with me. And I never really understood why I was late. I hated being late. It was embarrassing. And it wasn't until I really decided to research the topic that I discovered that there was a little bit more to being late than what I had thought.
Were you disorganized? Were you distracted? Were you one of those people that just couldn't sort of manage to manage their time?
Not at all. It was one of the things that I realized was that I was a very organized, disciplined person in many areas. But for me, what I realized is I was what I call a deadliner. I was drawn to that last-minute adrenaline rush, the last-minute sprint to the finish line. I didn't live my life in a calm, purposeful manner. Everything, I needed that shot of adrenaline to get me somewhere on time. And so for me, it was almost an appealing kind of feeling to be running down the street frantically trying to get somewhere on time. It was only when I realized that I was not going to get there on time that sort of exciting feeling turned to dread.
That's so interesting because I hate that feeling. Absolutely hate that feeling.
Yeah. You know, one of the things I found that was so interesting about researching lateness is that most late people truly dislike being on time, or excuse me, dislike being late,
right,
but that it is a lifelong habit that starts in childhood and that it's a surprisingly difficult habit to break.
Pauline, let me get you in on the conversation, and I realize there are probably many profiles of people who are chronically late. How do you see what's psychologically, what's at work here?
Well, as Diane pointed out, it's not a matter of time management. No matter how much time you have, it's possible to be late, you know. It's usually some form of psychological resistance that you know what you have to do, but for some reason you keep delaying it, you keep bargaining with yourself, you know, I still have 20 minutes, and you fight it all the way. So you're having all these conversations with yourself, and then you end up being late. And, of course, as Diane pointed out, you enjoy that adrenaline rush, and they say if it weren't for the last minute, nothing would ever get done. But then, you know, it just makes you feel bad, and it affects the rest of your day. And not to mention that other people start labeling you, and not only for being late, but that spills over into assumptions that you're unreliable, that, you know, that you're not a good person. It can generalize to other negative qualities that people think about.
Pauline, let me follow up on that, because it sounds like for some people they are late for the things that they actually really want to do. So what is that resistance about?
Well, they are late for the things that they want to do, but we all want to do something. I mean, like, a lot of women want to lose weight.
True.
So it's a difference between wanting to be on time or wanting to go someplace, but there, let's say you want to go to your family's reunion, a summer reunion, and you want to see some people, but then there's a little bit of anxiety. You know, maybe you've put on a few pounds, maybe there's a critical aunt. You know, there may be something negative there that is causing some kind of resistance that you're kind of putting it off and putting it off.
I wonder, too, Diana, and I know that you have profiles of certain kinds of chronically late people, whether some people are, they just literally do get distracted about something. You know, they intend to jump in the shower and get dressed for work, but they have to check something on their iPhone, and next thing they know, they've been there for 20 minutes.
Well, one of the things that I found, I headed a study at San Francisco State University and then went on to interview hundreds of late people and comparing their personality characteristics with timely people. And one thing I found is that chronically late people tended to have other problems with self-control and impulsivity in general. Now, this doesn't mean every late person has low self-control, but we found that late people tended to procrastinate more in general. They tended to have more difficulty with habits such as smoking, drinking, overeating, things like that. And they tended to engage in certain behavioral characteristics in common, such as magical thinking. Mm-hmm. They continually believe that they can make it to work in 7 minutes flat because 10 years ago they actually did do that. So I found that a lot of late people tended to have certain personality characteristics in common. A number of late people tended to fall somewhere on the spectrum of having attention deficit disorder as well. Chronic lateness is very common in people with attention deficit disorder.
Does that make sense to you, Pauline?
Oh, yes. There's a whole body of research now on self-regulation and habit formation. And, of course, attention deficit disorder, you're so easily distracted. Now, that doesn't cause every person with ADHD to be late, but those people who don't monitor it are more apt to be late.
Pauline, your book is Taming Your Inner Brat.
Yes.
What do you mean by an inner brat? That's not a very nice thing to say about someone's inner self.
We all have an inner brat.
Yes, we do.
It's the part of us that is still a two-year-old that wants what it wants when it wants it, you know, doesn't want to be inconvenienced and needs immediate gratification. And it talks to us. It's kind of like saying, well, you don't really have to get up. You could press the snooze button one more time and still be on time. And it's because it wants immediate gratification.
Diane,
and that's a lot about what lateness is the stalling. If we want to check our email or do something else or one more, you know, game on the game console, that's getting the immediate gratification instead of planning for a better future.
Let me go back to you, Diana, because I think for people that are punctual, when they have friends or colleagues that are chronically late, it really makes them angry. Can you understand that?
Oh, absolutely. I've experienced that many times myself. However, what I tell punctual people is that it's not about you. This has nothing to do with you. It doesn't mean that the late person doesn't value your time, that they don't value your friendship. This has more to do with the late person being able to manage their own emotions and actions. So I tell people don't take it personally. That doesn't mean that you can't sit down and have a talk with the chronically late people in your life and set some boundaries. Even have some rewards and punishments if they're very close to you. For instance, if you're going out to dinner, you can agree if they're more than 15 minutes late, they have to pay for the wine or they pay for the dessert. Or that if they're more than half an hour late, you're not going to be there. So it is important to talk about the problem with your friend or colleague, but don't take it personally. It has nothing to do with you.
Do you think that's true, Pauline? It's hard not to take it personally, I have to say, from personal experience.
It's people will say, well, that's so disrespectful. And the person who's late isn't thinking about you at all. That's one of the other things about being chronically late. You become so self-absorbed that other things and other people kind of drop out of your focus of attention, and it does have fallout. But they're not intentionally doing that. But I like Diana's ideas about having consequences for the person being late, because once you have a plan, you're less likely to be annoyed by the late person. You know, I'm going to wait another 15 minutes. If they don't show up, I'm leaving. And then, so you know that you're going to be annoyed for at most 15 minutes.
But do you think, Pauline, that there are also those sticklers for punctuality that have their own problems with being on time?
Oh,
like obsessively
sure.
So?
Sure. I mean, if you're a stickler for punctuality, that's another, the kind of thing that if you value that and you expect everybody else in the world to value that as much as you do, you're going to be frustrated a lot.
What do you suggest? I mean, I'm thinking of a couple, no one in particular, but let's say, you know, they have plans to go out to dinner. One of the members of the couple is dressed and ready to go, and the other is still in the shower. How do you suggest handling that, Pauline?
Separate cars.
Separate cars. Really?
Yes. Because that way it's consequences. I worked with a family where the boy, a 9-year-old boy, was always late getting dressed. Dad would drop him off at school, and he was late for work. So he decided that at such and such a time, let's say 7:40, if the kid wasn't dressed, he'd throw him into the back of the car in his jammies with his clothes. And he did that one day, and no 9-year-old wants to walk into school in his jammies.
No.
So he got dressed in the car, and that never happened again.
Oh, you like that idea, Diana? Consequences?
I think that's a good idea. There has to be. I think consequences really do matter. And even though a late person isn't doing it on purpose, there should be consequences, because they will. It's like a bride will be able to lose weight before her wedding because of the consequences. If she doesn't lose weight, she won't fit into her dress. So a late person will be more likely to be on time if there are severe consequences associated with it.
And we're almost up on a break. Did that work for you, Diana? As you said, you were a chronically late person.
You know, I think that nothing really worked for me. I suffered lots of terrible consequences. It wasn't until I really sat down and said, hey, wait a second. You know, there must be something deeper than just time management to this. It wasn't until I really looked at my habits and my sort of, as Pauline said, my psychological resistance, that I was able to kind of sort it out and develop new habits.
Well, let's take that short break. We'll get back to our conversation. We are talking about why some people are late and what can be done about it. That's Diana DeLonzor. She's a management consultant, wrote a book called Never Be Late Again. Also with us, Pauline Wallen, a clinical psychologist, author of a book called Taming Your Inner Brat. We already have calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Philadelphia Fight supports WHYY and presents the 20th Annual AIDS Education Month. Events, conferences, and workshops throughout June to increase HIV awareness and find strategies to end the AIDS epidemic. Featuring Nobel Prize winner Françoise Barré-Sinoussi, noted author and civil rights advocate Michelle Alexander, Reverend Jeremiah Wright, and Grammy nominee Wale in a concert on National HIV Testing Day. All events are open to the public. More at AIDSEducationMonth.org.
Next time on The Pulse, a topic we've been talking about a lot.
Bảo hiểm sức khỏe.
Đau chú ốc lý, đau gọt.
Mình đâm nạc, y biệt nạc.
Chẳng mai à mà khen.
What?
Health insurance.
Health insurance.
In Burmese.
Korean language.
Vietnamese.
Immigrants and the Affordable Care Act, benefits and challenges.
The same representative to speak with a marketplace representative.
She don't speak English well.
The Pulse, tomorrow morning at 9 on WHYY.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. We've heard from two valedictorians this week. Tomorrow we'll wrap up our series with a West Virginia student who's dealt with a very unstable home life.
I knew that to overcome the obstacles that I had in my life, I knew that I had to go on and get a post-secondary education.
That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen talking with Pauline Wallen and Diana DeLinsor about what's behind chronic tardiness and what can be done about it. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at Marty Moss-Cohen. We had, starting yesterday, actually, a lot of comments on our Facebook page as well. Let me get, looks like Eric from Havertown to join our conversation. And Eric, go ahead, you're on Radio Times.
Hi.
Hi there.
I wanted to talk about sort of the flip side of what you're talking about, being paranoid about being early for things. You know, I'm chronically early, and that can, I feel, annoy people just as much as being chronically late when I have things like a job interview. And I go out, I feel that I have to make several practice runs to make sure exactly how much time it's going to take me to get there. And I get there like a half hour early, and I walk in, and the person's not prepared for me. So, you know, I think it can be just as annoying to them as if I was late.
Well, Eric, let me take your comment and put it first to Pauline Wallen. Pauline, what do you think?
Yes, well, being that scrupulous, I mean, it does create problems for you, and it's inconveniencing to others, as you said, let's say for a job interview. But you might just, there's nothing wrong with being early, but if you're inconveniencing other people, then go someplace else for a while, and then just arrive maybe 5 to 10 minutes early. And so you're in the vicinity, so you know you'll make it, but you're not in somebody's face.
So go take a walk or go to a local coffee shop and then arrive, 5 minutes, 10 minutes before the appointment?
Right.
Diana, which I think raises a question about, you know, how, for and perhaps even for chronically late people, is that anxiety about what to do if you have time on your hands. You have extra time with nothing to do. Is that an issue?
Absolutely. I found that late people hated arriving anywhere early. They saw it as a tremendous waste of time. And often I call those people the producers. Those are the people that have long to-do lists, and they get kind of an ego boost from getting as much done as possible in every day. And they consistently underestimate the amount of time it takes to get somewhere. They don't like getting somewhere early because that's time that they could have taken out the garbage, washed the car, gotten the oil changed. And so for them, downtime is a very hard concept to grasp.
Is it a sort of anxiety time, or it's just what am I supposed to do with myself time?
These are people that, for them, the most important thing is how much can they get done in a day. And if they're sitting there just relaxing and doing nothing, things go through their mind about all the things they could be doing, all the how much more productive they could have been. So those are the people that they tend to try to time their arrivals to the minute. If they have to be at work at 9, they try to get there at exactly 9 o'clock. And as we know, the world doesn't really accommodate that kind of thinking. You know, if you even forget your sweater and have to run back upstairs, you're going to be a minute late.
Pauline, I'm also thinking about the fact that whether it's true or not, I think many people feel distracted. They have many things to do, you know, one more email to send out, one more load of laundry to throw in the washing machine. Does that factor into chronic lateness?
Well, of course it can, especially if you have this running conversation with yourself that you're justifying why you're doing this, you know, because so it'll save me time later on. I'm not going to be that much later if I, and as Diana mentioned, the magical thinking, you know, if I hit all the lights, it won't be a problem, or nobody cares if you're 15 minutes late for lunch anyway. So we have these running conversations with ourselves to rationalize why it's okay to be doing this.
We have an email from Doug talking about hitting all the lights at the right time. It's when the chronically late people get out the door and on the highway that a whole new set of problems occur. And I guess he's talking to people, you know, speeding down the highway because because they're late. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Pauline? Yeah?
Yes, that's true. And puts you in a bad mood for the rest of the day.
I would think so. Diana, any thought about that?
Well, you know, it's funny that you should mention that because I've gotten a number of emails from people who have said they've caused major accidents. I got an email from a man in Texas saying that he had caused a major accident and people had to go to the hospital, and it was because he was running late and he was speeding and not being careful. So it is a huge problem, especially with, I found, red light runners. I'm in San Francisco, and it's a huge problem in San Francisco that people run red lights. And typically, my guess is that they're probably running late.
Well, it's certainly true here in Philadelphia, one of my pet peeves. Let me get, looks like Amy from Bensalem to join our conversation. Amy, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, I can be chronically late, and I also do have family members who can be chronically early. And I have, I understand how being early for a job interview is helpful. But when I'm having a dinner party and my family members arrive 15 minutes early when I'm still in the shower and vacuuming, that is a major stressor. And I find it tends to be sort of, it seems to be the same emotional process that's driving it as being chronically late.
Well, that's interesting.
Or some, based on some kind of trauma, like family members I'm talking about are quite upset about people ever being late and seem to never want that pegged on them, so they're purposely early.
Well, Amy, let me see what Diana DeLantor has to say. Diana?
You know, it's funny because I had a conversation back when I was chronically late with my family. My mother's chronically early, and she used to get so upset with me. But I sat down with her, and it would drive me crazy because she would always come early to my house. And we just sat down and had a conversation about it, and I told her that I'm not being late on purpose, and please don't be early because it's making it harder on both of us if we do this. So I found that just sitting down and having a really honest conversation, letting them know that you're not being late on purpose, and letting them know that that arriving early is not helping matters either. And it, after we had that conversation, it really got so much better.
But do you think, not to put you on a psychiatrist couch here, Diana, but do you think your chronic lateness had to do with your mother's chronic earliness?
You know, I really don't. I don't think so, because in my family it was sort of half and half. About half of my family is chronically late and the other half is chronically early. I really think that it really had more to do with falling on some spectrum of attention deficit disorder. And to Pauline's point, rationalization played a huge role in my chronic lateness. I always blamed outside influences. It really wasn't my fault.
Do you think this runs in families, Pauline?
Well, lateness, I guess, does run in families, but it's not necessarily genetic, unless to the extent that attention problems are genetic. But getting back to Amy's question about people being chronically early, if you can predict they're going to be early and it's a dinner party, it would be great to have something for them to do while you're in the shower.
Like the vacuuming, right?
Well, not necessarily the vacuuming, but, you know, like setting out hors d'oeuvres or give them, like, have a jobs ready for them. They'll feel useful. You'll get, you know, I'll be able to offload one of your jobs. And if this is a predictable thing, rather than, if you don't want to talk to, you know, to every individual and beg their forgiveness, you can just not let it intrude on you and do something practical that manages it. When you have a plan, it reduces anxiety.
And if someone is predictably either late or early, it's easier to develop a plan and implement
right.
it as well. That's Pauline Wallen. She's a clinical psychologist, also author of a book called Taming Your Inner Brat, A Guide for Self-Defeating Behavior. Also with us, Diana DeLantor, and she's a management consultant, author of a book called Never Be Late Again, Seven Cures for the Punctually Challenged. That's our topic for today's Radio Times. We've got a lot of callers here at 1 888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can send us a tweet at Marty Moscow. And you can also post some comments on our Facebook page, something that we started yesterday. We have a comment from Ned. He says, it's hard not to take things personally when someone is late. People will show up on time for those they think are most important. This gets back to something we were talking about earlier about how it feels personal to the punctual person when there's someone who is chronically late. Diana, anything you want to add to that?
Well, you have to remember that chronically late people have suffered the consequences of their lateness more than you can imagine. They've been fired from jobs. They've missed airplanes for vacations that they wanted to go on. They've lost friendships. So going back to the example of the bride being able to lose weight for a wedding, yeah, if there's a winning lotto ticket that you need to pick up by a certain time, you'll rally and you'll get there on time. But being able to consistently maintain that, it is not an easy thing to do. And so it's really, again, it's something that timely people should not take personally. The late person can show up on time every now and then, but having it be consistent is very difficult.
Paulie, I'm curious about whether there are things at work, if there's a chronically late employee, for instance, what do you suggest a supervisor or a boss do?
Well, I guess there's consequences for being late at work, especially if you're, if other people are depending on you to do their job. So that's a, I guess that's an employment decision. For people who take it personally, we take a lot of things personally, that because we're all sort of self-centered. Yeah. And if somebody is late, that isn't necessarily, as Diana said at the beginning of this show, it's not about you, it's about them, but we forget that because we're waiting and we're the one that are inconvenienced. And so we're the ones that are supposedly, I'm doing air quotes now, suffering. But the way to deal with that, as I said, is have a plan and realize that it's not about you.
Diana, any thoughts about workplace tardiness?
Yeah, actually, I interviewed a number of companies, especially ones that were geared around timeliness, like UPS. And the first thing is to establish a corporate culture that underscores punctuality. So it should be part of the new hire orientation. It should be something that is talked about right up front. The second thing is to, if you have a tardy employee, call a meeting with them, discuss the problem, and then set a follow-up meeting so that the employee will know that their behavior is going to be monitored and that in a month you're going to sit down and look at whether there's been some improvement. That way the employee doesn't just hear it once. They know that there's going to be follow-up. Now, in this day and age, flexible hours can be one solution. But one thing I did find is even when you arranged for flexible hours, say you told an employee they could come in at 9:30 and leave at 6, they were still late. Huh. So even if they could come in at 9:30, they still didn't make it into work to 9:45 or 9:50. So flex hours can be one solution, but beware that that doesn't always work.
Let me get Barry from Westchester to join our conversation. Hi, Barry. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi there. My name's Barry. I have been chronically late my whole life. I'm actually in recovery, have been for over 20 years. I thought that might help my lateness. It didn't. I'm late for meetings. I don't intentionally try to offend anyone by my lateness. I'm really trying to work on it. I've been trying to work on it my whole life. I also have ADD. That doesn't help. But I didn't know if there was any kind of like support group for like lateaholics. You know, I mean, my friends would adjust the time and say I had to be there a half hour earlier. And, you know, they got into the point where they'd use, are we on real time or are we on Barry, my last name, time? And, you know, it's embarrassing. And It affects my family. It affects my friends. I would like to change it, but I'm not sure how to do it.
Well, Barry, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. It's a really important issue, and obviously we can even hear it in your voice. You're suffering with this. And Pauline, what do you say back to Barry?
Well, yes, I can hear that in his voice, too. There are many things you can do. If you look at lateness as a habit rather than as a character trait, it gives you hope. And how you talk to yourself is very important. So think about this. Imagine yourself saying, you're lying in bed and you say, I have to get up. Or you're saying, I will get up. Which one is more empowering? So the way you talk to yourself, obviously, I will get up, is much more empowering than I have to get up, because that's setting yourself up to fight with your inner brat.
Hmm.
And so self-talk is very important. Also, how you manage the time. So there's this thing called the small area hypothesis. I won't go into too much of what it is. But when you're working toward a goal, you have a better chance of staying motivated if at the beginning you focus on how much you've done and then toward the end how much you have left to do. So you can say, okay, I'm all ready. My teeth are brushed and my hair is combed. And then you kind of go through a little bit more of your morning routine. And then you say, okay, just find my shoes and I'm out the door. So how you talk to yourself at the beginning is focus on how much you've done so far. And that'll keep you motivated to keep going. And then when you're close to the end, when you pass the halfway point, talk about just what's left to do, and that will keep you going.
Diana, do you have one of your cures for Barry?
Well, as Pauline mentioned, there are psychological kind of things that you can say to yourself. The other thing is I believe that it's important to better understand your time. And it's what I call relearn to tell time. Because as I mentioned, chronically late people remember that day 10 years ago when they made it to work in 7 minutes flat. And even though it doesn't work day after day after day, they still give themselves that 7 minutes. So what I'd ask people to do is write down on a piece of paper how long you think it takes you to do your regular activities. For instance, getting ready for work, driving to work, grocery shopping. And then for a week, track how long it really takes you to do things. If you're like most late people, you'll be about 25 to 30% off. I used to think I could take a shower, get ready, and get out the door in 20 minutes. When I timed it for a week, I realized I was closer to 45 minutes, and that's if I knew what I was wearing. If I didn't know what I was wearing, it could take up to an hour and 15.
Right.
So that's the first practical thing. The other thing is, late people try to arrive exactly on time, and that's a mindset you have to get out of. You have to get out of the fact that, okay, I'm going to arrive exactly at 9 o'clock. You have to plan to always arrive 15 to 20 minutes early. If you do that, you may actually make it by 9.
Barry, I appreciate the call to Radio Times, and good luck with that as well. We are talking about how to be on time, and our guests are Diana DeLawrence and Pauline Wallen. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Amtrak, featuring patripsbytrain.com, offering train packages to destinations along Amtrak's Keystone service line. More information on available excursion packages at patripsbytrain.com.
The Thoroughbreds will be running in the Belmont Stakes Saturday with a potential Triple Crown winner in the field. On the next Fresh Air, Donna Barton Brothers, a former jockey with 1,100 wins, tells us about life at the track, being a TV analyst, and about her mom, who got into fights with male jockeys when she got into racing. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
The lawmaker who represents the lawmakers, if they live in the District of Columbia.
The founders of our country would never have left anybody behind, and the very last people they meant to leave behind were the people who lived in what was become the nation's capital.
Eleanor Holmes Norton on her city on representative democracy and a dysfunctional Congress. Next time on The Takeaway from PRI Public Radio International.
Today at noon on WHYY.
Sharrett Winery supports WHYY and will hold their 6th annual Wine and Music Festival on June 7th and 8th. This family-friendly festival features 8 local wineries with more than 80 wines for tasting, as well as food, music, and local crafters. More at SharrettWinery.com.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss Cohen. We're talking about why people are late and how to be on time. Talking with Diana DeLonzor, and she is a management consultant, author of a book called Never Be Late Again, 7 Cures for the Punctually Challenged. Also with us, Pauline Wallen. She's a clinical psychologist, author of Taming Your Inner Brat, a guide for self-defeating behavior. And you can we have a full bank of calls here. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at Marty Moss Cohen. We have an email from either Massachusetts or Ma, I'm not sure. Is there a correlation between chronically late and having chronic clutter problems in the home? Pauline, do you think there's a correlation there?
Well, I'll let Diana elaborate on the details, but she had mentioned earlier that being chronically late is correlated with other problems with self-control.
Go ahead, Diana.
Yeah, that's true. But interestingly enough, I did find that many chronically late people are not disorganized. In fact, sometimes it's the opposite. It's chronically, a lot of people are chronically late because they're so hyper-organized and so focused on getting everything done and getting every attention to detail, that it tends to make them late. Many late people are actually perfectionists, which can contribute to the lateness because they just can't leave the house until it's absolutely clean. They can't leave the office until every last task is done. So I in my interviews, I found it kind of a 50-50 with the people with attention deficit disorder having more tendency to be cluttered and disorganized.
Let me get Jake from Queen Village to join our conversation. Jake, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, Marty. Thanks for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
Among other things, I'm an artist, and I often have struggled with lateness in the past, and I worked really hard over the last 5 or 10 years to kind of make big improvements and try to be on time for appointments and things like that. But I still find myself working on these large installations, like, you know, up to the last minute often. And so it's sort of like the shorter term lateness I've managed to get a handle of, but the longer term lateness stuff I still find myself struggling with. I was wondering if your guests had any thoughts on that.
Jake, that's interesting. I mean, it sounds like you don't have like a set 9-to-5 schedule. It's built around various projects that you're working on.
Yeah, that's correct.
And does that complicate things, Pauline, do you think?
Well, it's combining, I guess, a greater window of procrastination with the lateness.
Do you want to add to that, Diana?
Well, I think too, one thing your caller is talking about is recurring projects versus one-time projects. It's hard to, you know, if you know every day you're going to be getting ready for work, you after a while you get a handle on, okay, this is how long it takes me. But if you have a huge project that maybe you've never done before, it's very hard to estimate the time on that. My only suggestion there would be to really sit down before the project starts and just brainstorm every single step that you think it's going to take for that project and put a time estimate next to it. Then once you've got your time estimate, add about 20-25% for things that could go wrong. Because whether you have you're launching a new website or creating this new art installation, it's really, things will go wrong. So you need to start factoring in time for that.
Well, good luck with that. And it sounds like, Diana, what you're saying is sort of map out your project and then build in some extra time, and chances are you might get closer to ending on time.
And may I add that
sure,
things will go wrong. That's what creates anxiety, and the anxiety creates the procrastination, because when you promise yourself you'll do it tomorrow, then you feel better already, at least for a while.
Right.
You keep doing that, and then you're scrambling at the last minute. So acknowledge the anxiety and just spend 15 minutes on it.
Go ahead. Finish your sentence.
Oh, just spend 15 minutes and just put your butt down there and spend just 15 minutes doing it. You can sign up for another 15 minutes after that first 15 minutes, but at least you'll get started. And usually all it takes is 10 to 15 minutes to get past that anxiety, that resistance.
Thanks for the call. Let's see what Drew from South Philadelphia has to say. Drew, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
How you do? Thank you for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
I have a daughter who's 7 years old, and she is fantastic in every way, except for she is like molasses trying to get to go anywhere on time, especially school in the morning. Whereas my older son, he's 8, she's 7. He is self-motivated, out the door, no problem. And she just, the socks don't feel right, the shoes don't feel right. I got to change my underwear 3 times. I don't like this, I don't like that. And when the earlier person, there was the example of where we just threw them in the car and took them. If I did that to my daughter, there would be a meltdown. The mucus coming out the nose, the tears.
We got it. We got it, Drew.
Right. I'd have a blob off at the school.
Yeah, no, let me ask you a quick question. Is it just school related, or are there other things that she does the same thing with?
Same thing. Other things, too.
Other things as well.
Amusement parks?
Just whatever's getting good. Even birthday parties. Trying to get her to go to a birthday party. You know, It takes time.
Well, Diana, I'd be curious what as you said, you were kind of a chronic late person, and it sounds like even as a child. Can you give Drew some ideas, some suggestions?
Well, as I mentioned before, I really do believe that chronic lateness is part psychology, part biology. And, as you mentioned, that his daughter tends to dawdle in many different areas. And so I do think that it's seeing a doctor, ruling out physiological problems is the first step. And I think that many of you probably remember, I think it's called the marshmallow test, Holly, maybe you can correct me on this, where they found that children who were able to exercise self-control with candy at a very young age turned out to be more self-controlled, successful adults. So I think it really shows this isn't something that people do on purpose. It's something that's sort of a physiological kind of characteristic. So I think the first thing is really getting her checked out by a doctor. The second thing is you can still, even if she does have problems motivating herself, there are habits she can get into. The first thing is really sit down and have kind of a powwow with the whole family and talk about how are we going to overcome this. Mm. The second thing I found that can be helpful with kids is having a chart where you really keep track of their timeliness and have rewards and penalties associated with that. I know that my mother did that, and she docked my allowance for every 10 minutes I was late, and that really worked for me because I really wanted that allowance when I was a kid. The other thing you can do is children often respond to music, so you can help them better understand time by saying, okay, I'm putting on this CD. When the CD's over, we're leaving. And pretty soon, if you use the same CD regularly, the child will start recognizing, okay, when this song is over, my breakfast needs to be done. It can be a way of helping them better gauge time.
Drew, good luck, and thanks for calling into Radio Times. And I'm wondering, Pauline, just from some of the callers that we've been having, those that have a hard time leaving the house, do you think for some people they don't want to leave their house or their apartment? They really actually want to stay home.
Well, that's a minority of people. But most of the people that are listening to this program probably do want to leave. It's not a fear of leaving the house. Although that, if you have a fear of leaving the house, right, then being late is just a small part of a bigger problem.
We have a Facebook comment from Anne. I'm always late, but I am also the last one to leave, be it work, a party, whatever. Is this common? Pauline, do you have thoughts about that?
I'm not sure. I haven't done studies on whether latecomers stay late. But if the person is saying, well, I put in my time.
I'm not sure she is or not. But what do you think, Diana?
Well, you know, it's funny because late people say that all the time. But what's important to understand, it's not so much, okay, I put in my time. The perception when you arrive after everybody's already there and already engrossed in their work is not a good one. And trust me, you cannot make up for this. I interviewed many managers, and even if a person put in 12 hours, the fact that they arrived at 9:30 put a bad impression on things. And also, you have to remember, if the rest of the people left at 5 o'clock, they're not there to see that you stayed till 8 o'clock at night. So, so it's really a little bit of a rationalization there. It really puts a bad impression.
Well, and if you're lingering late at a party, the people that are throwing the party might actually want you to go home.
Yes.
Let me get Ruth from Busselton to join us. Hi, Ruth. Yeah. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes. I used to be late all the time, making people angry. At any rate, I sat down one day. I actually sat down and spoke to myself and said, Ruth, why are you late? And from inside, my subconscious, it came out immediately. I don't like to wait for people. And if I'm late, I never have to wait for anybody. Mm. And I said to myself, that's sick. And from that day on, I have never been late. And what I did was work backwards. If I have to be somewhere and leave at 7, I start at 5:30 or 6 or whatever it takes me. I work backwards when I plan,
mm-hmm.
Well, and that has cured me.
Well, Ruth, that's a very interesting, and Pauline, you were talking about self-talk. I mean, here's Ruth really sitting herself down and talking to herself about her lateness.
The other good thing that she alluded to was that it became self-motivation. It wasn't out of fear of criticism. It wasn't out of fear of punishment. Goals that are intrinsically motivated from within, we have a better chance of sticking with.
Ruth, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Let me see what Carol from Green Lane, Pennsylvania has to say. Carol, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, ladies. Thanks for a great show.
You're welcome.
Family and friends that are late tend to make me take it personal. I know you say don't, and I understand that. But to me, if they really cared, they would plan because they know that I get worried or frustrated, and they really need to look at what they're doing. We did try lying. We tried saying we wanted to leave a half hour earlier, and that kind of works until they catch on.
Mm.
But it's a thing where I was a manager in in business for many years. I'm retired now, and lateness was not to be tolerated, you know. And this is just for me disrespect.
Well,
whether you love me or not, it's disrespect.
I hear you. Let me see what Diana has to say. Diana, go ahead.
Well, I understand why it feels disrespectful, because it is disrespectful, and it's very inconvenient for the person that's waiting. But it's also important to understand that human behavior is complex. And I always say telling a chronically late person to just be on time is like telling a dieter, just don't eat so much. If it were that easy to control our behavior, we would have no Alcoholics Anonymous, Gamblers Anonymous, Weight Watchers, things like that. So it is really important not to excuse lateness, but to understand that we all have something. And I explained this at one point to my family. I said, you know, we've all got something. Some people complain too much. Some people drink too much alcohol. For me, it was chronic lateness. And I think that once you understand that we all have something that we wish we didn't do, that we have a hard time controlling, it makes it a little bit easier to bear. Again, it doesn't excuse the lateness, but it makes it, you don't take it quite as personally.
So, Diana, are you a more on-time person, having written a book and become an expert in this issue?
Absolutely.
Are you?
I have to be. Of course. Once I analyzed the problem, it was Ruth, your last caller, that said once you really sit down and think it through and understand why you're doing it and why you're rationalizing, it's a really major step in overcoming it.
We're almost out of time, and I'm just going to read an email from Amy from Springfield. She says she's a recovering chronically early person, and her husband is chronically late, and she has learned to relax from him, kind of turning on our head what we've been talking about. Pauline, any comments you want to add to that?
Right. I guess if they've worked it out, she's not taking his behavior personally. They probably go places in separate cars. And they've worked it out so that their good points outweigh this inconvenient one.
And Pauline, we're almost out of time here, but is this I read something like 20% of the population having a problem with being on time. Does that seem about right?
Yes, that seems about right. But again, not taking it personally means that you recognize that the other person has the problem. And when they are scurrying around at the last minute, and they're trying to get on time at the last minute when they've frittered away the previous hour, that they weren't really thinking about you. They were too self-absorbed.
Well,
No,
I have to say goodbye to you, Pauline. Now, Wallen,
right.
Thanks very much for joining us. And Diana DeLonzor, I think I mispronounced your name several times during the hour, and I apologize for that. Thank you so much for joining us on Radio Times.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. And we want to close things out with a clip of Danny Kaye singing I'm Late, and this is from the Walt Disney film Alice in Wonderland.
I'm late for a very important date. No time to say hello, goodbye. I'm late, I'm late, I'm late, I'm late. And when I wave, I lose the time I save. My fuzzy ears and whiskers took me too much time to shave. I run and then I hop, hop, hop. I wish that I could fly. There's danger if I dare to stop. And here's the reason why, you see, I'm overdue. I'm in a rabbit stew. Can't even say goodbye. Hello, I'm late, I'm late, I'm late. I'm late, I'm late for a very important date. No time to say hello, goodbye. I'm late, I'm late, I'm late, I'm late. And when I wave, I lose the time I save. My fuzzy ears and whiskers took me too much time to shave. I run and then I hop, hop, hop. I wish that I could fly. There's danger if I dare to stop. And here's the reason why, you see, I'm overdue. I'm in a rabbit stew. Can't even say goodbye. Hello, I'm late.